keep Rayman Digital on the air through 2020 by pledging to our Patreon page. Your continued support allows us to continue to make great content and offer even better features in the future. Help us keep the lights on in the studio by pledging $1 to $10 a month. Go to patreon.com/Rainman Digital to pledge.
Blimey. Ooh, this is one out of a jam jar you got here.
House of Mystery contains demons, angels, elementals, magicians, wizards, apparitions, adult language, and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not enter the House of Mystery.
All right, then. On with the show.
All right, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the House of Mystery, the John Constantine and Friends podcast. I am Michael Flores. Today, I'm a sex demon. Every episode, I'm something new. Today, I'm a sex demon, and I like to possess people.
At least you don't want to be possessed into a cell phone, apparently.
But I'm also a woke sex demon.
A woke sex demon.
So I asked for I definitely asked for consent.
You have to ask for consent first.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like, may I enter, please? Sexually, that
sexually.
And the bum region. But I'm asking.
Why choose the bum? Just basically take any orifice.
What, the ears?
Hey, wherever a hole is.
Wow, Dave, you're not very...
If you're a sex demon, man, you can't just have any boundaries.
You gotta... Well, you know, I don't know this guy. Please. Once again, I'll give out his address later. Just hit me up on Twitter. And you guys can throw things at him or kill him if you want. All right, so we are back, and we are here to discuss, break down, and review John Constantine Hellblazer number 2, A Green and Pleasant Land, part 2, by, of course, the man, the genius, Simon Spurrier, and art by Aaron Campbell, the other genius. I'm enjoying this read immensely, David.
Reading these two issues just makes me remember why I love comics so much.
Yeah.
You know, it
sometimes you have to be reminded because there's a lot of garbage out there, right?
There is. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be honest.
Go ahead.
Everything
be honest.
Is just the comic books nowadays. It's very cookie cutter. You know, there's a kind of like a set formula now that the big two companies, Marvel and DC, just follow. And why? Because it's the easiest way to do it. You know, you have your big events, you have your superhero storylines that are shallow. I'm sorry, they're just shallow.
Yeah, not all the time, but...
But then you get like...
But mostly, more often than not, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, then you get like the writing that we're getting in the Sandman universe.
Yeah.
It's very... Very yeah. reminiscent of the Vertigo.
I'm reading it all. Everything in the Sandman universe. I'm hoping they slow down just a bit with the releases with the Sandman within the Sandman universe because I don't think financially I can keep up.
Well, dude, I mean, like, just in the short amount of time that the Sandman universe has come out. About a year?
Yeah, a little over a year, actually.
Now, we're talking about the Hellblazer number 2, but the other Sandman titles are like close to like their full 10 issues.
I think most of them are up to 14 or 15.
14 or 15 at this point.
Yeah.
It's amazing what what they've been able to crank out.
Yeah.
In this amount of time to get the Sandman universe, basically Vertigo, back up and running.
Hey guys, we're going to close out Vertigo. Hold on a second. Okay. But let's create something called Sandman universe. isn't that Vertigo?
No. We're following Neil Gaiman's run.
Right. This will be curated by Neil Gaiman. Therefore, it's not Vertigo. Okay. Listen, I don't give a fuck how you spin it. I love it. The writing is so nuanced and the art is captivating. It really does draw you in. There are moments where the imagery just plays on so many different emotions, establishing that much needed tone, that tone that is a requirement for a Hellblazer title.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Simon Spurrier sure knows how to script out a story.
Yeah, but him teaming up with Aaron Campbell, though, is just gold at this point.
It's a match made in heaven. How about a match made in hell? Is that better? That's more appropriate for Hellblazer.
It'd be more appropriate for John Constantine.
Yeah.
Honestly. But like, just pairing those two creative minds up has been thus far in two issues, gold.
Yeah.
Just gold.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
Spurrier gets Constantine's voice, but not just it's Spurrier getting Constantine's voice, but it's Campbell getting like the visuals right to give you that Vertigo vibe.
Yeah. They're working good together.
I mean,
working well together. Is that more appropriate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Grammatically. Yeah.
I speak English.
Do I? Hey, listen, we speak American English, which is horrible.
It's horrible.
We just make it up as we speak sometimes. All right. So my initial thoughts, I read this issue probably three times before today's recording, and four times now. And each time I pick something up that I had missed. This isn't an easy read in the sense that you can just turn your brain off. Sure, yeah. It's escapism, but I like to compare this read to watching a high-quality indie film, if you will. I think that's a good comparison. Yeah. There is an intellectual flair. I love seeing the Constantine that thinks, investigates, very contemplative. The narrative definitely reflects that. And the introspective nature of Constantine, it dictates the story. And that's what's really working for me in this issue, of course, and so far where we're at. Dave, what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts for this particular issue was I'm really surprised how cinematic the comic book feels.
Right?
Like, every single panel matters. Like, it's like looking at a storyboard for a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite pages that Campbell did.
David, if you don't turn your phone off, I'm going to turn into a sex demon and I won't be woke.
But one of my favorite pages that Campbell did was that one scene when John initially wakes up.
Yeah.
And you have him lying in bed, turning to talk to his cell phone, which is vestibulin. And it looks like this deserves to be shot cinematically.
Yeah.
Like a film noir shot.
It's a great page.
It's a great page.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's move into this issue a bit deeper. Let's start with the synopsis. John's return to London isn't going as smoothly as he'd hope, though it's already been just as bloody as he could have expected. Enormous angels straight from the mind of William Blake are tearing people to ribbons in Peckham Rye Common. And the gang lord who's pressed John into service is getting increasingly impatient about John's inability to deal with them. All right, so now tackling the immediate story first, because we did get a tiny bit on the bigger story as well, involving old man soulless Constantine. That's what I'm going to call him, old man Constantine. Sometimes old man soulless Constantine. What do you like better, old man Constantine or old man soulless Constantine?
Old man soulless Constantine at least separates it from mistaking that old man Constantine like old man Logan.
Okay. All right. I like that. All right. So the use of K-Mag this issue was very well done. I've always loved when writers use despicable characters to get inside the thoughts of our protagonist. You know, you flesh them out for the reader. But using that sense of familiarity as a way to parallel the two, you show comparisons, you know, makes the reader uncomfortable to think that K-Mag understands John.
Yes.
Which is something they made a point to highlight in this issue. And what I'm talking about is, to be more specific, is the junkie comment. I mean, the comment you tell yourself you can't leave no shit undeterred. But I know a junkie when I see one.
That was a cool moment.
I mean, how telling is that? How effing telling is that? Number one, you know, setting aside the fact that K-Mag is very intuitive and he can read people, maybe just as well as Constantine. But the fact that he says the word junkie, that he knows, hey, listen, buddy. Listen, you can pretend all you want. You're doing all this from the good of your heart. But there's a part of you that feeds off that adrenaline, that needs the rush, that you're right smack in the thick of it. I mean, it zeroes in on a very big part of what makes Constantine who he is, the problems he faces, the lives he has ruined. Yes. Now, let's not forget that the entire, you know, spin, the rub of this new Hellblazer series is that he's supposed to be having a second chance, an unearned second chance, essentially.
He has a second chance. Yeah, right. Right. I mean, like but the cost is he doesn't have his old friends with him.
Right.
Like he loses everybody. I still say one of the most powerful moments in the past issue that we covered is that moment when he loses the one guy that all us Constantine fans connect John to is Chaz. And he loses Chaz right there. And the way he loses him, it was so dark, but it was so poetic for Constantine. Kind of telling him, hey, you screwed up back then.
Right.
And you have a second chance now.
Yeah. And bringing up Chaz, I'm glad you did that because, and again, going back to the many lives he has ruined. I mean, Constantine isn't an evil person, but he does have the mentality of a junkie, of a person who's addicted to crank, if you will. And what happens when someone is addicted to drugs? They ruin people's lives, not just their own. They ruin others. And sometimes, of course, they're not evil. They're not meaning to, but they get wrapped in this vortex. And I just love that moment because many of us justify our actions. And sometimes we don't even realize what we're doing. We make up stories in our head to make ourselves feel better. And Spurrier using K-Mag in such a way, in such a way that this issue underlines one of the very key concerns that Constantine has about himself. Sometimes we need those excuses to press on. But when someone threatens to tear down those walls that we put up, suddenly we are tasked with answering some very big questions about ourselves.
And I honestly feel that that's why the introduction of K-Mag as a villain is one of the bright spots of these past two issues.
I agree.
I love K-Mag as a character.
Well, do you really want a disgusting person like that to understand you?
Exactly.
Wouldn't that bother you?
That would bother the crap out of me. And the way that K-Mag, his dialogue plays out is like K-Mag knows that he's this way. He doesn't care.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like,
it's a great parallel.
It's a great parallel because in a lot of ways that's John.
Yeah.
That's what if John went over the edge,
went full on dark side,
he would turn into K-Mag.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely an argument to be made for sure. And obviously we're sticking with this junkie side for a while here. Even the way it was captured, the art, when his back is turned to K-Mag. The way Aaron Campbell just draws out Constantine's reaction to that junkie comment.
Yeah.
It was an oh shit face. Like, fuck. You're right. It wasn't like, oh, you know me, bro. It's shit. Someone can see through me. I'm like, am I this transparent? What the fuck is happening? Or, I mean, there's so many different things. That's why I love the art and the writing in this comic book, because typically, again, going back to the superficialness of many, many comics these days, it's very easy to take a panel or let's say a writer's trying to make a statement. It's very easy. There's no room for what we're doing here, analyzing, because there's a lot of exposition in those comic books and they specifically tell you what the person's thinking because they talk it out every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Or every five panels. But with this, they allow the art to do the work. That's why I equate it to, and as you said, it's very cinematic, but also it feels again like an episode of television where a good TV show doesn't spell everything out. They rely on the camera, on the cinematographer framing the scene appropriately so it conveys a thought. And that's exactly what Aaron Campbell's doing in various moments throughout this issue. And that junkie moment is just one of a dozen where they nail it every time.
Absolutely. And the one thing I noticed along with that junkie scene, every time they cut cut a close up into John.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, now I know that these, the characters that Campbell is drawing are not real. They're not real people. He's not actually using real live models to actually, you know, create his characters.
I think he does at times.
At times, yeah, but
because I think you feel it
that basically, like, you're looking at an actor's performance.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean? Like that one scene that you mentioned about the junkie scene when they do the split screen.
Yeah,
and John's just staring right at the camera.
Yeah,
that's like an actor doing the camera. Yeah, the camera.
Air quotes the camera.
and like you can see emotion in his face.
Yeah.
And it's almost like looking at a real actor doing it. And that goes down to show how good Campbell is.
Well, yeah. Capturing the many details of emoting. How many times do we say that acting isn't just reciting lines or being able to look cool on camera? You got to be able to emote. And that's something that comic books, obviously you lose that, but it doesn't feel that. It feels like, you know, these people are emoting. That's how fantastic and realistic the art is at times. So
another good example is like just a couple panels back.
Yeah.
The scene with, I think it's Noah, the mute.
Right.
He's not even saying any a word, but just his facial expression and basically the way he holds his arm out, and you see like, you can tell that he's angry, and then you read along the little quote unquote bubbles that are supposed to be his dialogue, and it works. It shows emotion on the page without it being a real moving, you know, cinematic cell.
Yeah, dude, it's real good. One last thought with the Constantine thing. I want to drive this part home. The idea that Constantine is a junkie also tugs at the reader in other ways as well. And again, I want to drive this point home because I feel like it's going to play a big part, not just in the final chapter of the story arc, but the overarching story pertaining to old man soulless Constantine. Again, Constantine is supposed to be doing things differently. So there's a reason why that junkie comment resonates to the reader. He was given a second chance to do right. He was allegedly, because we don't know the whole story, and honestly, I don't trust old man Solas Constantine, but he was allegedly placed someplace he was needed. And obviously, there's going to be a price to pay, or there was a price to pay. And Constantine may feel at that moment when he was called a junkie that, hey, you know what? I'm falling right back into the same habits.
Yeah.
You know, so, but we also got that classic literary harbinger moment by way of K-Mag. He fell into the role as he voiced the words, "Something big is coming." If you remember that panel, the angel situation, as we find out, was not an actual angel situation. I believe we had said as much during our previous discussion, nothing divine about these killings. I believe it's reasonable to assume that they are manifestations of the hobo racist. I believe that much is clear in this issue.
Yes.
Constantine had asked or said a few choice words, thought form, tulpas, if you will. Also egregore, which is an occult concept representing a thought form or a collective group mind, an autonomous psychic entity made up of and influencing the thoughts of a group of people. So we're made to believe that, or we're led to believe that, obviously the divine is not involved, but somehow the hobo racist is creating a tulpa of some type.
Yes.
Now, a tulpa is a concept in mysticism and the paranormal of a being or object which is created through a spiritual or mental powers.
You might actually start manifesting your own tulpas.
I do tulpas at night usually, like when it's late and I'm lonely. You know, I'm single right now, but like, you know what? I'm going to create a super sexy hot chick. And I start thinking of Caprica 6 from Battlestar Galactica. Listen, don't judge, okay? It's okay. It's a tulpa. It's not real.
Just because it's not real. It's
I will her into existence, and she's usually wearing some sexy, sexy lingerie. And then we have fun.
Well, at least she doesn't eat your face off.
And then I will her away. I'm like, all right, be gone.
Be gone.
No, but seriously, though, I mean, tulpas are some creepy ass lore.
Oh, dude. They fit perfectly in the Sandman universe when you actually think about it.
Man, I have read up on some tulpas, and the stories can give you nightmares.
Yes.
People that will some type of character into their life. And at first, the tulpa ends up being friendly and you can control them. But eventually they gain a mind of their own and they become a little nefarious at times. They plot against you. I had to quit reading a couple stories a few nights ago because I'm like, yeah, you know what? No, thank you.
I need sleep.
I don't need to see imaginary things. Goodbye.
But it's so true, dude. The one thing that could be our main enemy is our own mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what they say is like nothing in the world can frighten us more than what's in our own mind. Imagine that. A tulpa is essentially something that you create from your own mind.
Yeah.
So essentially you can create the most deadliest or most terrifying thing you can possibly imagine, and it will just be focused on you.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, thank you. I don't need that. But bringing it back to the issue here, these manifestations seem to have become reality due to the racist hobo's knowledge about William Blake.
And I love that. I love the use of kind of like that. I guess you could call it a twist of using literature, you know,
yeah.
that which is literary power of William Blake.
Yes. Which is, you know, things that I love when you can utilize literature and you find a clever way to innervate the idea of a poet or a philosopher into your narrative. And in this way is right up our wheelhouse. This is a type of stuff you and I like.
Oh yeah, because
we love this type of stuff,
and especially using the hobo, because to me that's such a perfect idea when you're dealing with trying to evoke thoughts and words from a philosopher or a poet. When you actually think about it, sometimes all those great classics, great writings that we all know and recite by heart, they do sound a bit hokey. And they sound like they might have been made by a madman. Yeah. And I really dig the fact that they basically said, yeah, you know, the guy that basically is creating all this problem is a crazy racist hobo that is in love with William Blake,
yeah,
or inspired by William Blake. And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, this is perfect Constantine. This is a perfect Constantine character.
And William Blake isn't necessarily the best person for someone to be obsessed with. I mean, the guy was an amazing talent. He was a fantastic poet, and he created various trends in his work and his field. But, I mean, in today's standards, the guy would easily be locked away.
Yeah.
You know, he'd be in a mental ward. I mean, this guy at a very young age was already seeing things in the streets. At 9, allegedly, he did, in fact, see... Not in fact, I'm saying in relation to the issue was correct. Apparently, according to accounts, at 9, he saw a tree full of angels. You know, God put his head to the window. And because of poverty and illness, these visions increased, and the world of angels and dreams made its way into Blake's highly prolific artist life eventually, his poetry, engravings, and watercolors. So his visions became a part of his work.
Yeah.
He included it in pretty much almost everything he did at some point. So I love that. I love the literary angle and including that. I'm hoping this will be a thing and other issues as well, pulling from literature and whatnot.
I am too, because this is what reminds me of the old Vertigo type of storytelling, where in Vertigo, back in the day with like a lot of the Vertigo titles, they would take things that you would never expect to actually tell a story about or try to weave a story around, and taking those classics and just taking them into another direction. And doing this shows me that Spurrier understands what the old Hellblazer comics felt like, because this feels like an old Hellblazer comic. I mean, if this was like, if I didn't know what year this book was made, I would swear to God that basically it was made in the early to late 90s when Vertigo was at its peak.
Yeah.
Because that's the type of storytelling that this invokes, you know, and just
evokes.
Yeah. And like what you said, I really do hope that this isn't a throwaway. I hope this leads to some more type of storytelling like this, and the whole, I honestly feel that I hope that there's more to this hobo than meets the eye. Like, yeah. The biggest question that
I'm assuming he's going to be the biggest part of the, you know, closing out the story arc's got to be, right?
You would think, because like Constantine brought up a really good question, is how is this guy pulling this off? It's obvious he doesn't have any quote unquote magic abilities, and he doesn't seem to be the type of person to, you know, be in the mystic arts. He's just a crazy hobo.
That's rude, David. You're a crazy hobo, you son of a bitch.
Some days I want to be.
Sometimes you just want to escape from it all.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you think being a hobo will fulfill that need.
If it creates my own tulpas?
How are you going to eat, Dave? How are you going to afford Hellblazer if you become a hobo?
I could just mill around the comic store and basically just sit there and read comics.
Do you think there's any... Oh, you are such a hobo. I hate you for saying that. Do you think there's any hobos that like to read Hellblazer? Just side thought here. Do you think there's anyone out there like, you know what? You know how some hobos beg, you know, for cash so they can eat or have another... you know, nip off the old whiskey bottle. But then there's that one that said, hey, new Hellblazer came out today. Do you have some change? See, that's hobo chic right there.
That's hobo chic. That's me.
So what do you need this money for, sir? Hellblazer issue comic. Number 3 comes out next month. Dude, sold. Here you go. Here's 20 bucks.
Help yourself. All right.
Yeah. In fact, you know what? Let me open up a box for you at the local comic book shop. Just go in, pick it up. I'll pay every single month. That's a good cause. Now, that's a homeless person I can get behind. All right. So let's talk about the haunting dream, or the haunted dream, or whatever you want to call it. The best version of you dream. What is all this? Is old man soulless content? Is he putting like some type of hex on him? Is he conjuring up some juju? What's he doing to Constantine while he is sleeping? Now, was it a dream, you think, or was that actually old man Constantine doing something to John? See, what are your thoughts on
that? The initial thought that I had on this was it was a type of flashback just to remind John,
right,
of, hey, you got a second chance, just like what we said.
Don't fuck it up. Yeah.
But then after like reading it a couple times, I'm going, well, wait a minute. We all know that basically if you read that prequel issue, there's more to that constant than that John.
Oh, for sure.
Than we know.
Yeah.
And the way that basically Spurrier spells it out on that page. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it sound like it's a dream. Something's happening to John.
No, I agree. I think he's doing something to him.
And I think and after like reading it like two more times, I basically said, well, wait a minute. Yes, it would make the simplest sense to say he's just having a flashback. Try to remind him, hey, don't fuck it up.
Yeah. But we know old man soulless Constantine doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know that basically, well, wait a minute. why would old man Constantine make sure to tell John that?
Let's just put it into perspective one last time, okay? We have someone who is essentially John Constantine with all of his flaws, with none of his soul.
Yes.
He's not a good guy.
No.
He would have no qualms with anything when you think about it. Putting everyone's life at risk with no guilt, living fun and fancy free, whatever, fuck it. This guy is going to be, this could potentially be one of the greatest enemies John Constantine has ever had. I mean, yes, we've had, you know, bizarro versions of Constantine throughout the years.
But this one just feels more sinister than any of them.
Yeah, well, especially because of the type of juju he has when you think about it. I mean, this is a guy that managed to bring Constantine back to life.
Yeah.
And then send him to some different dimension, timeline. We still don't quite know how all that's going to play out.
Oh, yeah, because like I'm like going, so does Tim play a role into this from Books of Magic?
We don't know. I mean, he could have just chosen that jump off point because it's a very popular storyline. That whole Books of Magic, what was it, 4 issues?
Yeah.
Yeah, we covered it, which still hasn't been released because I'm an idiot. You know, the holidays, it'll come out soon. But we broke all that down already on a recorded show.
But there has to be a reason why old man Constantine chose that.
Chose that Constantine?
Yeah, there has to be a reason.
Why didn't he choose the new 52 Constantine? I mean, he's so epic.
And he knows Superman, and he would call all the Justice League.
He would just be like, hey, guys, hey, Sup, why'd you help me? So stupid. All right, so we also had a new character introduced. He's got to be ongoing, right? A cop that has requested that Constantine stays away from Noah.
From Noah, yeah.
Now, Noah's mother apparently is someone important. Do you think, or is it just someone the cop cares about? What do you think is happening? Do you have any thoughts?
I think that basically it's someone of high power, high ranking.
Yeah.
And Noah's connected to it, but he can't say anything about it.
Right. Or, well, because he can't speak. He can sign about it, though.
He can sign about it. But obviously,
that's not funny, David. Don't make fun of people's disabilities, okay?
You know what?
That was David that said that. I know it sounded like me, but that was not me. That was David.
I'll take full responsibility for that.
David moonlights as an impersonator at times, and he does a lot of people who aren't famous like me, and there's really no reason for it, but David doesn't make sense sometimes. So
I've been known to actually throw my voice.
I mean, he also impersonates the Circle K clerk down the road. I always ask him, why are you choosing to impersonate this guy? He's nobody. Most people choose to impersonate Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Schwarzenegger, but no, you're choosing to impersonate people like me and the Circle K clerk down the street. See, I say something offensive and then I just spin the audience in circles so many times they forgot what I said.
And see, that's you learning to be a Constantine.
Yeah, there we go. All right. So it looks like Constantine is building relations with new people. I do like that. We also have the door woman bouncer, Nat, right?
Nat. I like Nat.
Dude. Bringing right back, being brought right back into this issue. And she had a part to play.
Oh, yeah. And like the thing I really dig about all these characters is like they're so diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Like you hear they have their own individual voices.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't blend together. I love the cast that they've gotten in 2 issues of Hellblazer.
Yeah.
And Springer is able to actually just make them all feel so different, but blend so nicely together as a ensemble.
Yeah.
Like. I'm serious. I love the character of Nat. I hope that there's more to that Nat. We have more adventures with Nat and Constantine down the road.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. I mean, there's a reason why I know the whole point of having Constantine have no friends was obviously to kind of a way to not only just reboot the stories, but also, you know, give the reader a sense of isolation for Constantine.
Yes.
Let me backtrack. I'm losing my train of thought here, but it's a way to convey a notion, an idea of isolation, the fact that Constantine is alone, that he cannot, you know, call on his friends. He has no friends. I mean, let's be honest, he's never really had a lot of friends to begin with, no. But he has no acquaintances, allies, enemies that are sometimes allies. He's completely alone, which creates this, you know, a feeling of danger even more so in these issues than we've had John Playston in years past, because before, you know that someone's going to have his back.
Yeah.
John's by himself. He doesn't have anyone to have his back. So not only does it work to create just this feeling of isolation, but it also says a lot about his character. We get to see those moments where he realizes he's alone and he's just a fish out of water. He doesn't understand the technology of the time. I mean, so much so that he's having the angel trapped in the
vestibule.
Yeah.
I love
vestibule. He has him trapped in a phone where he's the dude's watching porno and he has him do things. Like, hey, can you? It's basically Siri. I mean, let's be honest, but it's angel.
It's a very angry angel.
Yeah, a fallen, right? We don't know much about him, right? I mean, he's just a fallen angel that Tim had trapped, right?
Yeah, apparently in another issue in the Sandman universe, I believe it's in Books of Magic, Tim Hunter traps Vestibulin in the cell phone, and John ends up taking the cell phone.
Okay. All right. So yeah, bringing it back to the whole, you know, Nat and Noah and the cop aspect. Yes, I think we are building up the new team.
Yes.
I think that's the whole point. Yeah, that's the direction we're going. You don't waste time developing certain characters like you're doing without a purpose.
The interesting part about it, though, that I just realized. I just realized just now while we're discussing about how John's creating this new team. Do you think him getting these new contacts is supposed to play in the greater story?
Because if
you think about it,
why not?
If John just gets these brand new people to actually go and help him, but he still fucks up.
Yeah.
And these people suffer. It feels like they're trying to tell a story that John can't break the cycle.
Yes.
And it goes back to like what you said about a junkie. A junkie can never break the cycle.
Yeah. Because let's be honest, if he was doing things differently, he would stay alone. He wouldn't make new friends. No, yeah,
you're right. You're right.
Because he's aware of what happens when people attach themselves to him or he attaches himself to people. People die. So if he wasn't falling into the same habits, he would say, hey, guess what? I'm alone. That's just how it is.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So the first story arc of Hellblazer, according to Aaron Campbell, a tweet going back to December 15th of 2019, according to Aaron Campbell, is officially in the can. Now, the reason why I'm reading this is because he's going to be gone for a couple issues. So Aaron Campbell will not be doing the artwork for apparently issue 4 and 5. It'll be done by Matias Vergara. Is that how you'd say that?
Vergara, yeah.
Matias Vergara. He will be doing the artwork for issues 4 and 5. So what do you know anything about Matias?
Matias actually has done some stuff. Let me bring up my notes. I actually wrote
about... Oh, he's worked on Coda.
Yes.
From Boom Studios.
From Boom Studios. And his art is going to actually... I hope that it's not too much of a clash, but I think his art will do fine. Blending in kind of like, you know, switching up into a new story. And that's why I think it's very, very important that at issue 4 and 5.
I don't know it's much a separate about,
story.
I don't know much about Matias, but I'm going through some of his work right now, and it's definitely some gorgeous work. But I'm not a big fan of the artist being switched.
No, and that's why I said
in the middle of an. I guess it's not in the middle of a story arc.
Yeah,
so that's good. But it's also, we're barely moving to issue 4. We're going to have a different artist. And I don't know what the reason for that is. Maybe Aaron was contracted to something else and he just could not put the time in. That maybe happens. He's going on holiday. I who knows why. But either way, I'm sure it'll be fine. Maybe the story arc that we are going to get into next, whenever it starts, I'm assuming issue four, maybe it'll be appropriate. Maybe the switch in artistry in the art itself will be story appropriate.
And that's the thing is, like, when it comes to a Constantine story, the art has to mix with the script. And that ultimately in the when we get to issue number four, it's going to depend on how Simon Spurrier's writing mixes with Matisse Bergara.
Yeah.
Because, like, it mixed perfectly, in my opinion, with Campbell.
Okay, so he has produced, Bergara has produced art and graphic novels for Boom, DC Vertigo.
Yes.
Humanoids and Neil Gaiman's Odd and the Frost Giants. I like his work, so I'm gonna keep an open mind. I'm just Dave. You know this about me. I know this is a relatively new show, so the listeners aren't aware. But I'm not even a big fan of crossover sometimes, because it really throws me out of the story when issue one has a whole thing going with the art, and or I should say, let's say part one has one thing going on with a certain set of artists and writer, right?
Yeah.
But then you go to like part two, and suddenly it just looks completely different. The edges of a character may be softer or less contrast, or they may have more of an abstract vibe to their work. Either way, it kind of pulls me out of the story because I'm paying too much attention to the differences in the art.
But I think that when it comes down to it, it's going to be, I'm really going to be looking how good Spurrier's writing is, because
you're right. You keep saying that and you're right. And I know why. You're trying to convince me, like, dude, it doesn't matter.
It does to a degree, but like the only thing that really makes me comfortable about it, because I'm like you, I hate it when they change artists in the middle of a story.
Right.
But knowing that four and five are suddenly a separate story arc. One, two, and three are one story arc. Four and five are another story arc. That makes it a little better, because then we're going to be told a different story of John's adventure. We're going to have another John's adventure. And then, but the big question, because it's all being written still by Spurrier, is how are they going to connect? How is one, two, and three, which is considered one story, connect to four and five? And then it jumps back to Campbell. So
yeah,
it's going to be a very interesting test for Spurrier as a writer.
We're being babies right now. We are, but I'm sure it's going to be fine, right?
I have faith in Spurrier.
Yeah, yes. And also faith in the Sandman universe. And listen, they haven't put out any shoddy work yet, so I'm not concerned. It's more of just a talking point, I guess.
But it's also because, like, you know, if this was being written by a rookie writer, let's call it what it is. Spurrier is not a rookie writer. He has the credentials backing him.
Yeah. No,
but
I know.
If this was done by one of the up and coming writers of DC, and they said, hey, we know you've been doing this title, here, take this, then I'd be worried.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so let's go to a very quick break, Dave, and then when we get back, we're going to jump into our final thoughts.
Who the hell do you think I am? Benedict Bloody Cumberbatch!
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
These guys that are insecure with women that make more money. I'm like, no, please make more money than me! Please! God!
Yeah, I've never understood
that. Listen, if you just need some good dick, I will give it to you. If that's my entire job, if that is my entire job.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to dick this old woman real good.
Or even just, I don't even care if it's a, you know, a woman my age. If she wants to go and make the money, she's, listen, I want you to stay at home. I'm fucking ready. I'm ready to retire.
That's what Obamacare should have been. Universal health care coverage.
That's called a dictatorship and a harem.
Hey, I'm for it. Hey, count me in.
Why can't we have the reverse Middle East?
Yes.
You know, I will.
Yes.
Amazonians.
Oh, fuck.
I will wear that hijab. What's it called?
I think that's right. I don't know.
Hijab?
Burka?
Listen. Burka, yeah. I have no fucking
pride.
You want me to wear a hijab?
I knew the answer because I'm the same.
You want me to walk 10 paces behind you, but then I get some good vag later? I'm okay. Who gives a shit?
Dude, I'm saying.
You want to throw rocks at me if I look at another woman? Okay. I shouldn't have looked. I shouldn't.
For more Rain Man, visit RainManShow.com.
Keep Rain Man Digital on the air through 2020 by pledging to our Patreon page. Your continued support allows us to continue to make great content and offer even better features in the future. Help us keep the lights on in the studio by pledging $1 to $10 a month. Go to patreon.com/RainManDigital to pledge.
That Irishman there's a leprechaun.
So sorry, are you being serious or racist?
Both, love.
Welcome back, everybody, to the House of Mystery. We are covering Hellblazer, John Constantine Hellblazer, issue number 2. All right, Dave, do you want to start with final thoughts?
I'll start with final thoughts, yeah.
Okay, go for it. What is your RMD grade and your thoughts?
Okay, my RMD grade for this book is a solid 89. It's a very strong second issue. I really liked it. I liked the elements that they brought in. Spurrier has stuck to his guns since issue number 1, which is really good because the continuity in his writing is just perfect. It's impeccable. Like I like the fact that basically he has a very nice, tight narrative that it's a story that I can follow. I'm not lost. I'm not wondering why is John doing this? Why is John doing that? What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
No, the story is John basically trying to pick up the pieces after being just dropped basically bare ass naked with nothing. and essentially the first 2 issues is basically him trying to pick up the pieces and figure out what the fuck is going on and relying on like what makes John Constantine great, being a detective. You know, me and you mentioned it in the first part about how being a detective in the film noir element has to be with John Constantine. It's something that he got introduced with back in the Vertigo days. They kind of lost a little bit in New 52. But with this resurgence of Hellblazer, this is a return to form. This is a return to kind of like that John, a detective novel noir type of storytelling.
Yeah.
And in regards to the second issue, I think Spurrier's done a fantastic job. He has me really, really excited to see how he's going to wrap up this little story arc.
All right.
Within the next issue.
I like it. I like what I'm hearing here. What's your score?
I gave it an 89.
All right. 89. That's fair. All right, I'm going to give this a 92. I love it. I thought it was great. It really pushed the narrative further. It's amazing that we're only 2 issues in because I feel so fulfilled. You know, there are times when I'm reading, you know, regular comics, which is something I just don't do that much anymore these days. I'm very selective and careful. I don't have a lot of time, so I'm very picky what I read and when I read it. And a lot of times with these other comic books, you know, you're getting into the story and suddenly it's done. Wait a second. It said it was 30 pages, but all I've read was 20 pages because you filled it up with a bunch of colorful ads. And then you had exposition for 4 pages. And then you had 3 pages that had no talking because it was just action. I'm like, what the hell am I doing spending money on this? But 2 issues in and it feels so satisfying. There's a story, a full story is unraveling, and it's so nice to be able to read something like this again. And I'm not saying there aren't other great comics out there. There are, but not as far and few between.
Yeah, it's not a Hellblazer type of storytelling. Let's be honest. I mean,
well, Spurrier in general, I read a lot of his stuff, and that guy just is so good.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm spoiled because I am very picky with who I read. Maybe I'm a little pretentious and snobby. But who cares?
But as a comic book fan, you are allowed to. Yes. Because every comic book fan has their favorite artist.
I have my guilty pleasures, too. You believe that?
Oh, yeah.
Ones that I won't even mention that I read because I'm embarrassed. So, yes, 92%. The artwork is just fantastic, and we already blew the artwork during the first issue discussion and also throughout this discussion, so I can't really add more to that. But I'm really excited for this new era of Hellblazer. I was kind of caught off guard as a Hellblazer fan. I was just blown away. I believe the news dropped in July of last year that a new Hellblazer series would be launched. I had figured something would happen eventually with the Rebirth title ending, and of course, you know, DC's always doing something, but I just didn't expect this. We are back. We are officially black. Black?
Black.
That's so racist, David. Why were you impersonating me again? Hellblazer is officially back. I think we can say that. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I think this is enough blowing my throat. I want to thank everybody for listening to our discussions. If you miss any part of this broadcast because you're listening to us on our live channel, RM Channel 001, that's available on TuneIn, you can always find us on demand on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Just search House of Mystery. Add us to your favorites. Leave us reviews as well, because the more reviews and attention that feed gets, the more we become more relevant on those feeds, and we pop up quicker, and we get on those top 10 lists, and Dave. So thank you, David.
Thank you.
And good night.
My name is John Constantine. I'm the one who steps from the shadows, all trench coat and arrogance. I'll drive your demons away, kick them in the bollocks, and spit on them when they're down, leaving only a nod and a wink and a wisecrack. I walk my path alone, because let's be honest, who'd be crazy enough to walk it with me?